for the truth, recognizing him as a great.
Hello, my name is Stephen Williams, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Meridian Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are glad you're all here, especially the newcomers. We ask that all cell phones be turned off at this time. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In keeping with our singleness of purpose and our third tradition, which states the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking, we ask that all who participate confine their discussion to their problems with alcohol. Will you please help me? Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, and neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Will you please help me open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. All together. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Is there anyone at this meeting for the first time or any visitors, and would you like to introduce yourself by your first name only?
My name is Naomi. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from
Memphis. Hi, Naomi.
Hi, Naomi. Glad you're here.
Glad you're here.
Thanks, David. I'm
Frank from
Recovering Alcoholics and
business
triangle
group like
as well. Hi, David. Glad you're here.
I'm Dana. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dana. Dana, how are you? Glad you're here. All right. The Meridian Group believes sponsorship is an essential part of recovery. If there is anyone here willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you're in need of a sponsor, please look around the room and visit with one of these potential sponsors after the meeting. I have asked Sean to read how it works from Chapter 5 of the Big Book, and when we get to the steps in the reading, we'll all go around the room and each one of us will read a step. The steps are up here on the board.
How it works.
Who are you?
Rarely.
Who are you?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
I forget. I'm Sean, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sean.
Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all of the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ask his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery.
One, the middle of the fire is in my home. They're alive and become unmighty.
Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
Three, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him.
Four, made a searching and very small inventory of ourselves.
Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of all our wrongs.
Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character.
Seven, completely understand what's wrong.
They've listed all persons who are harmed who became willing, recommends, and all.
9. May the recommend such people wherever possible, except when you do so when you give them or others.
10. You need to take personal inventory and remember all the public issues.
11. So for the prayer and meditation to improve our constant contact with God is number 7. And only the knowledge of His will for us to pray and pray.
12. Having had a spiritual awakening out of this all of this stuff, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs.
Many of us exclaim, what an order. I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A. That we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C. That God could and would if He were sought.
Thank you, Sean. I've asked Boxcar, I'm sorry, I've asked Mike to read the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mike, and I'm definitely an alcoholic.
Hi, Boxcar.
And this is why it works. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. Two, for our group corporate service, but one ultimate authority, a loving God, and He may express Himself in our group consciousness. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirements for AA membership is desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has one primary purpose, carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, but the problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. But even our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain a personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to play stressful for personalities.
Thanks, Dr. And I've asked Kurt to read a section out of the Big Book.
I'm Kurt, I'm out of my heart.
Hi, Kurt.
This is page 161 from Vision for Youth. But life among Alcoholics Anonymous is more than attending gatherings and visiting hospitals, cleaning up old scrapes, helping to settle family differences, explaining the disinherited son of his irate parents, lending money and securing jobs for each other when justified. These are everyday occurrences. No one is too discredited or has sunk too low to be welcomed cordially. If he means business, social distinctions, petty rivalries and jealousies, these are laughed out of countenance. Thank you. Being wrecked in the same vessel, being restored and united under one God with hearts and minds attuned to the welfare of others, the things which matter so much to some people no longer signify much to them. How could they?
Thank you, Kurt.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, our seventh tradition reminds us that we are self-supporting through our own contributions. We'll pass the basket at this time. If you have, if you have papers need to be signed, please place them in the basket and I'll sign them after the meeting. AA-related announcements are on the board. Are there any other AA-related announcements?
Hi, I'm Dana.
Hi, Dana.
Y'all have some flowers out there for the conference of young people in AA. The final date, you can start it Halloween weekend, October 30th to November 1st, in Waco, at Hotel Waco. And y'all can still use those for registration flyers, but I just want to let y'all know the date and the location.
Halloween weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Dana. We also got some flyers in the other day from the North Texas Roundup, or a week or so ago, I guess I should say. And they're holding a gathering Friday, August 21st, Saturday, August 22nd, and Sunday, August 23rd. They're going to have speaker meetings and also some workshops. It's going to be held up in Dallas at the Doubletree, just where the gathering of the Eagles was last weekend. And there are flyers out there on the board if anybody'd like to attend.
David Anderson, I'm calling.
Hi, David.
New Walnut Springs Campfire meeting Saturday the 13th. We've got Ronnie P. from West speaking. Y'all bring the lawn chairs and hot dogs and marshmallows and have a good time. It's always the second Saturday of the month in July, I think James from Waco will be our speaker.
Thank you, David. We began gathering what, around 6:30, 7? 7 o'clock. Then our speaker starts at 8. Okay. Any other AA-related announcements? All right. Tonight is birthday night. Birthday night is a celebration of sobriety and yearly lengths of sobriety. And we have two names up on the board. Johnny Mack. Is there a Johnny Mack here?
McCullen. He's not here either.
Okay. And Juan.
Yeah.
Yay, Juan. Juan's celebrating his birthday tonight. Do you care to share a little bit, Juan, about how you've done it? You've made it a year now.
As far as group, family, what's it called?
Do we have anyone else celebrating a birthday tonight? Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name's Adam. I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Hi, Adam.
And I'm celebrating 2 years of into sobriety. As of May 14th.
May 14th. Very good. Yay. We'll pass out chips at the end, I guess. Okay. Oh, you already got yours? Okay. Very good. All right. It being birthday night, normally whoever chairs the meeting is responsible for bringing in a speaker. And tonight, Linda B. from the Stephenville Group is going to speak to us. I met Linda in rehab, actually. Linda was one of the counselors there. Fell in love with her. Oh, she was mean and she was a hard ass, but I still fell in love with her. Linda was not my counselor directly, but Linda extended her courtesy, her kindness to me, and on Fridays, she would allow me to go into her office, pick up the telephone, call my son, and me and my son would do payroll over the phone. He'd be at my computer in my house, and I would talk him through payroll there. And Linda was kind enough to let me do that for the first 2 or 3 weeks, and then we couldn't get a hold of him, and he figured it out on his own. My son also attended the
family program.
Yes, family program for support of those that were in rehab, and Linda was the instructor there, and that's really, I guess, how I got to know Linda, and just fell in love with her. She's an outstanding member there in the Stephenville group, and she's going to speak to us tonight, and I'll just turn it over to you, Linda. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks.
if you don't, I'm going to stand.
Go right ahead.
Meet people. But my name is Linda. I am an alcoholic. By the grace of God, and because this program works, my sobriety date is January 20th on or about 2003. And for that, I don't know how to be grateful enough. So I'm here to kind of give back a little bit of what Juan's been given. It's, I love this program. I love this program. I am an alcoholic. I just told you I'm a liar, a cheat, and a thief. I will sleep with my husband, sleep with your husband. I'll sleep with your wife. I don't care. I'm open. I'm a drunk. And when I get drunk, I am a complete moral defect in full flight from reality. And I become everything that is reprehensible as going human concerns. January 20th, on or about, I was sitting at my kitchen table getting ready to teach a Bible study the next day. And did I mention hypocrisy? Liar, cheat, thief, hypocrite? Yeah? Okay. Getting ready to teach a... true story. Getting ready to teach a Bible study, and I'd reached out for my cup of coffee because, got my cup of coffee. And what I found in my hand was a shot of bourbon. I had had a sober blackout. I had not been drinking that day, but the day before. And in a blackout, I had gotten up, poured a shot of whiskey, brought it back to my table, and I guess it poured out the coffee, because the coffee was nowhere to be found. Either that or I never made it. I don't know. So, there you go. So I found myself with a shot of bourbon in my hand and wondering how it got there. And the thought came to me that, oh God, I'm an alcoholic. For 20 years, I knew I was addicted to solid forms of alcohol. But until that moment in time, my delusion, as far as liquid alcohol goes, was so deep and so entrenched and so strong that I finally came out of delusion and into denial, and oh God, I am an alcoholic. And I would not allow this life to continue. My ex, who, by the way, had to divorce me, and what's it called when somebody protects himself from you? That would be why. He couldn't be married to me anymore. So out of self-preservation, he had to divorce me. But he had left some medicine in my bathroom during, the time and separation and the alcoholism where you're paying push me, pull you, yes, come back, no, go away, and all the sick things that we do to each other. Well, he had left some medicine in my bathroom, and I had, as I said, stopped taking solid alcohol years before. So I went to the bathroom, and I poured out a handful of hydrocodone, 8 or 10, and a handful of morphine, 8 or 10, took them back into my kitchen, and tossed them back with some more bourbon, and decided, that's it, I'm done. I'm done. Had to pee. Damn it. Got up to go pee, and the next thing you know, I was waking up on my kitchen floor, literally glued to the floor with body fluids. If it can come out of your body, it came out of me, and I am a girl, so there you go, okay? And apparently it was three days later. I had gone into some sort of overdose, coma, something, I don't know, seizures probably, there on my kitchen floor. And I remember I was teaching a Bible study the next day. For 3 days, no one showed up at my house to check on me. For 3 days, no one called or come by. For 3 days, I laid on my floor. Now, it said in our big book, it has said, we do not apologize for God. We do not apologize for our belief in our God. I do not apologize to you tonight for telling you about the God of my understanding. I will not apologize for that. I no longer teach Bible studies. Okay? That part of my hypocrisy is gone. I do, however, tell everyone I know about this program. when I came to, I cleaned myself up sort of, and I scraped off the kitchen floor sort of, and five showers and scrapings and things, and I got up and got dressed and went to work. And, oh my God, Linda, where were you yesterday? Jeez, girl, you look bad. Oh, I tried to die, you know? I tried to die, but it's okay. And when I went back to work, I went back to work at Summer Sky Treatment Center, where I had been working for a year. Okay? Did I tell you I'm a hypocrite? Oh, yeah. That's all right. We mentioned that, right? Liar, cheat, thief? That would be me. I worked there as a morning cook. At the time this is going on, I was kitchen supervisor. All of that to tell you this. My favorite, and I believe in my world, the strongest, most clear-cut promise in the big book is the first word of the first foreword to the first edition. And that is the word we. We of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our fellowship of men and women. We're a group of 100, over 100 men and women. Okay. We. And that is the best, most awesome promise, I believe, in the book. And it's the first word that was published. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. I had my first drink when I was 5 years old. I was 41, I believe, when I got sober. I'm 47 now. Been 6 years, so I think I was 41 when I got sober. Daddy was brushing my hair. Now, Daddy was a Marine. Daddy was a Master Gunnery Sergeant in the United States Marine Corps, and he drank like one, okay? And he behaved like one. And for those of you who know what you know, you know. If you don't, I just can't explain it. I was a civilian, therefore I was icky, but I was also his oldest daughter. I was the daughter. The princess. The one. But I was a civilian. So I was 5 and Daddy was home from Vietnam and he brushed my hair. And he'd brush my hair and he'd drink beer and I'd get bored. But he'd brush my hair. And he'd brush my hair and one day I reached up and I took his beer and I took me a big old swallow and I felt that beer in the bottom of my toes. Hold on. Yeah, baby. And it come back up to the top of my head and my mother was washing dishes and I thought, I do too belong. I was 5 years old and already knew that I did not belong on earth. I was not an earth person. Well, Mama squealed and Daddy chuckled, so they got had a little tin cup, and Daddy would brush my hair, and out of each beer, he'd drink beer, 3 beers, and out of each beer, I'd get my little tin cup full of beer. And Daddy and I would drink beer, and he'd brush my hair, and we did this for weeks. Until they had to go back to Vietnam. So I came home from school, and the drill was I came home from school, I'd get my brush and the beer. Okay? I had my priorities, baby. Okay? So I got my brush, and I opened the refrigerator, and there was no beer. And I turned around. Mom, of course, was at the sink. And I said, Mama, where's Daddy's beer? And she said, Linda, Daddy went back to Vietnam. I said, they have beer in Vietnam. Where's the beer? You know? Daddy was always going back to Vietnam. So what? He took the beer. This is wrong on every level. It's wrong. Onward and upward. By the time I was 7, I was watering the cognac. Did you know you can't add water to cognac and make it... Oh, it just doesn't work. They notice. They notice that. But they blamed it on my older brother. Okay? That worked for me. That really, really worked for me. Our oldest brother, he was 5 years older than myself. And there's a lot of family history. Our mother was our predator. Okay. Now, Daddy, when Daddy came home, when Daddy was home, we were safe physically. My sisters and I were safe physically. But we were not safe emotionally or mentally. You know, you go to Marine, and he's raising daughters, and we don't behave like we're supposed to. You know, you don't bark and we jump. You bark and we cry, or we go to a corner, you know, that sort of thing. Regardless, when Daddy was home, physically we were safe. Okay? My brothers, however, were not. So Daddy would beat the boys, and Mama sexually abused all of us children and taught our brother to do that to us girls. My father had no clue this was going on. Okay? So, There you go. So, you know, my home was not a home that was good for children to grow up in. I did not grow up in a safe environment. I did not grow up in a place where you would want your child to be.
Okay.
However, that's where I was raised. And there was fear. And there was cognac. And I figured out real quick, too, that if I wanted the cognac the next time, it wouldn't. I was 7. Oh, well, it worked. Terry, the oldest brother, he got blamed for watering the cognac, so he got spanked or beaten. And that worked for me because he'd been teaching us little girls things little girls shouldn't learn until they're married, personally. But, you know, that is my opinion. My opinion. Okay. So life went on. I was 9, and there was a hand-rolled cigarette in the middle of a parking lot, 7-Eleven parking lot. And a friend and I walked by, and I said, "Oh, my God, what's this?" And she said, "Well, probably it's marijuana." And I said, "What's marijuana?" And she said, "It'll get you stoned." And I thought, "Is it better than cognac?" She says, "I don't know. What's cognac?" We're 9, y'all. So we lit this sucker up, and by golly, by gum, I liked it. I liked it a lot. Thus began my use of solid alcohol. I was 12. No, I wasn't either. I was 10 or 11, but was sitting at the kitchen table. And I was born and raised in Long Beach, California. Raised in Capistrano Beach on the Pacific Ocean. Okay, so I was son of Marine. Daughter of a Marine, and I was raised around the sun to hippie. Okay? So all the people who were protesting the war, their parents, these are the children that I was going to school with at this time. Okay? Made for some interesting conversations on the playground, to say the least. Mama and Daddy were talking about these hippies, and they were smoking pot down at this gazebo, this huge cliffside gazebo. And I wanted to know, well, I didn't ask, of course, because that wasn't something we did in our family. Asking questions. However, they were talking about these hippies, and they were smoking pot. And I was going to sneak out of my bedroom window and introduce these people to marijuana because I could not understand why, in God's name, they would smoke pot, and how did they get it out of the toilet to begin with? Okay? The innocence of an addict. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. I was an instant alcoholic. With all of the innocence and all of the tragedy and all of the warped sense of thinking that we develop. Okay. I didn't sneak out of the window, and I didn't save the hippies. They made it through without me somehow. I'm still not quite sure how that happened, but it did. It worked. For them, it worked. When I was 11, Mama left. Daddy had enough of her... Now, Mama was never on medicine. She was never diagnosed with anything, but my mother was a sick lady. You know, she really, really was. She was not a well woman. And Daddy finally had enough of her shenanigans. And she sat me down. As I said, I'm the oldest daughter. Mama sat me down when I was 11 years old, and she told me she was leaving. And when she told me she was leaving, she also told me at that time that the worst day of her life was the day I was born. Everything bad or wrong or awful that had ever occurred or happened in her life was a direct result of my birth. Okay? And it was a relief. It was really, really... Finally, someone was being honest. I knew I didn't belong in this family. I knew I wasn't wanted in this family. I knew I shouldn't be in this family. And finally, someone was saying, "You don't belong here." And thank you, God, for truth and honesty. So it was a relief, and it was a freedom. And it allowed me to do what I wanted to do, which was go drink. I like to drink. I don't like the way I feel. I don't like the way I feel when I'm not intoxicated. For whatever reason, I took that first swallow of beer, y'all, and instantly it did for me what nothing else on earth ever did. I belong. So Mama left. I was 11. Daddy came home from divorce court. Walked in the door and said, "The house and the kids are yours." There were two younger siblings. Daddy and I learned to cook, and we learned to clean house, and we learned to grocery shop. We learned menu planning. Daddy ran his house as though it was, a unit. He ran his house like we were on base, like we were little miniature Marines. So, I learned how to run a house. Now, you wouldn't know it to look at my house today. I'm still rather rebellious. Okay, and I swabbed a deck and got years. Okay, years. I own a Swiffer. It's brand new. I've had it for 5 years. It's great. I am rebellious. I am rebellious still. It's a character defect that I really like. And I'm keeping it for now. Okay? It's true. So what happened when I was 14 is one day I was on my way home from school. And knew, when I got inside the house, I knew that I was going to have to get the roast or do what I did. And I decided right then I was leaving. I was done raising children. I was done being a parent. I was done being treated like a non-person. I was tired of the terrorism. I was tired. I was just tired. Just tired. So, the next morning, I woke up exceptionally early and got me a little ditty bag. I had a little day pack, it was actually one of Daddy's old day packs. At any rate, I got it packed up with just a few things I would need, like my wooden wine glass and some books and two changes of clothes. I didn't know how long I'd be gone. Packed it all up. Set it outside, around the corner, and when it came time to leave for school, I got everybody ready, okay, da 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 da, and I hit the door, and I left. And I didn't see my father again until I was 17 years old. I don't understand runaways, who when they run away, they get caught at their best friend's house. What the hell is that? What is that? You just wanted to go play. I wanted to leave home. I was born and raised on the Pacific Ocean. I've never seen the Atlantic. So I'm on my way. 14 years old, me and my little thumb and my little day pack. It took me another few years to make the Atlantic Ocean, but I did finally get there. Bad things happen. Your mom has told you all your life. Bad things happen to people who hitchhike. Okay, bad things happen to people who hitchhike. And I hitchhiked all over this country. I think there's only 5 states I have not been in, and one of those is Hawaii. And that's just because I was caught. I was stowed away on a freighter, and this little piece of the strap on my pack, so I was caught before we left the dock. It's the only reason I didn't see Hawaii. I tried. I've hitchhiked all over the nation. The first vehicle I ever drove was an 18-wheeler. True story. I'm never going to start small. I'm a drunk. Not going to start little. Going to jump right in. All right. Going to go, Okay. It ran out of gears going down Mount Sherman, Wisconsin. I was up in British Columbia one winter. A farmer caught me, saw me. Actually, he didn't see me. He saw a little red glove that was up above the snow because I'd fallen asleep, and snow come by and covered me up. He took me home. He and his wife kind of thawed me out. I still don't have all the feeling in my toes. Excuse me. But as I said, bad things happen when you're hitchhiking. And I decided that I was ready to stop. Thank you. I was ready to stop. And I'd heard about a place in Northern California. And you find this place, and it's a waterfall that on this side of PCH, and then you hike this way for 2 days, and then take a left and bear, and I don't know. By the bear, squatting in the woods, that's where this place is. Well, I found the place. By the absolute grace of a God who was doing for me what I could not do for myself. I found this place. It was a little community up in the mountains. Thank you. Full of some lovely, lovely people. It really worked. It was started by an Arapaho shaman and his wife, or woman, Wisdom, 35 years before I showed up. And I might mention, I don't have, excuse me. If I had a G-rated story, I would give you a G-rated story. I don't have that, though. That's not my story. You know, I work real hard to get my story down to a PG rating, you know, instead of NC-17, you know. I had never voluntarily been with a man. Every time I had had any type of intimacy at that point, up to that point, I had been in a blackout, or it had been an actual physical fight, you know. And sometimes I won, sometimes I lost. You know, things happen. Things happen. And things happen. So when I got there, the place was called Home, by the way, and when I got home, there was a man came running out of these trees. Of course, you know, your vision has to adjust anytime you go into it, even a new house. Your vision has to adjust to this new house. So I had been taken into this clearing, and there were teepees and like hopis, and there were a few caves back in the back. And here came this huge, huge Samoan son of a bitch running out of the trees. He goes, "Oh my God! Oh my God! Look, it's a new one!" And he grabbed me up and he spun me around. Okay, that was a little thing. And set me down, and boy, I clocked that son of a biscuit just as hard as I could. Boy, just, and he called me Spittin' Kid. That was it. I was very little. That was Simi. And Simi Simi and I wound up bonded. And he was a tanner, and he was loud, and he was obnoxious, and he was wonderful. And he had this huge heart, and this huge voice, and this huge energy, just a huge, huge man. He was just wonderful. And golly, it took him 3 months, I think, to talk me into just sitting next to him. I cussed him. Boy, I just kept cussing. All right, Spittin' Kitten. We talk, you and me. We talk. Yeah, right. We don't talk. Nobody hurt me. For the first time in my life, I was safe. No one hurt me. Shaman started teaching me, you know, the ways of healing and herbalism you know, things of this nature. He started teaching me to respect my heritage. I am Scottish. And, of course, you know, he's an Arapaho, you know. And I said something about one time about wanting to learn the spirit dances or something. And he said, "Why? This is not part of you." He taught me to be, he began to teach me to respect my heritage, you know. And I love that the United States has so many different peoples from so many different places. I love that about us. We are the greatest nation on earth, as long as we each respect our own heritage. And in respecting my heritage, I learned to respect yours. You know? So, Simi and I had a daughter. Her name was Echo. She was perfect in every way, of course, as most, you know, daughters are. Until they get their first taste of beer. They're right. So one day, Shaman and I were on our way out. I don't know, we were going to go. There were some roots or something he wanted to show me, and we were going to, they had to be dug up in a certain way. I didn't know he was going to show me. We come up and around, the village was in a little basin type thing. And I turned, seeing, of course, as a tanner, the hunters had just come in, you know, from gathering some deer and some elk, I believe. it didn't hurt. He wanted to make sure they skinned him just right, because he was going to need these skins for a particular time. So he was over there, and in his own way, you know, just, and I told him, you know, to settle down or something. You know, I pointed my little finger at him and stamped my little foot, and he was laughing. And then he was flying backwards. And, excuse me. He was the first to die. There were 87 of us that morning. And there were men who had decided we didn't need to be there anymore. By the time that evening rolled around, there were 17 of us surviving. In 3 days, there were 8 of us left. I had just handed Echo off to one of our caregivers, and I took her back, and I took little Grace. Ah, thank you so much. And I took little Grace. I had both of these babies, and I was running to the case. I got to the case. I handed the babies off, and I went back to see if anyone needed any help. We were brutalized that day. We were just a bunch of lost souls, you know, just living. And I killed a man that day. I still have the scar from where he decided that he was going to cut, all my nether region. He was going to make sure that all of that was smoothed out. And I still have a few scars, you know, on the rest of my body. But I did wind up, I went into a blackout. I don't remember what happened. I do know that when I came out of it, I was covered in blood. There was a man there. That's what I know. I really don't want to remember any more than that, so I'm really kind of hoping I don't remember more. I know what happened. God knows what happened. It happened. We buried our dead. We helped our dying. And I went back to the caves, and apparently Echo and Grace had been shot while I was carrying them. And the bullet passed through little Echo's body. She was 3 months old. And the bullet passed through Echo's and through Grace's body. The babies were actually dead before I got to the cave with them. So no shock. I left. I found PCH. I started hitchhiking north, and I found Alaska. Up on the Bering Strait, there's a little bitty town. I used to say it was Yakutat. It wasn't Yakutat, because Yakutat's too far south, although I was in Yakutat. A little further. Where I was, we would skip rocks, and we would talk to the Russians across the way. Okay? And I worked as a dancer in a bar. I worked as a prostitute on the street. Well, in the bar, but, you know. You know, I was a girl, and I was in Alaska. Hello. It used to be like that in AA. You know, if you were a girl in AA, buddy. Well, now it's Alaska. Gotta go. So I did. I got tired of Alaska. One winter. I made it south. I started working for some businessmen, making incredibly huge, entirely too much, and, well, too much money, and all of it, none of it legal. Money to the point of, we would lease jets to fly from where we were living into Dallas for supper, and from Dallas into New York, you know, for a flight. You know, I mean, just that type of stupid, obscene amounts of money. And that's what I did. And then I got pregnant again, one more time. During all of this time, of course, I am not sober. I have not drawn a sober breath since I was, well, definitely not since Big Sur. Big Sur, we used to smoke a lot of weed. Lots. And we made our own mead. If you ain't never had homemade mead, don't get drunk again. It's okay. It's okay. But we made our own mead. So it really wasn't even sober then. When I went to work for these businessmen, I got started with really solid alcohol. And at one point, it stopped working. I knew I was pregnant. I took a hit, and I could feel the baby going to seizures. And I said, okay, that's it. That's it. You know, God, that's it. So I called my stepfather. My stepfather allowed me to come home and stay with him and my mom for 6 months. The baby was born. I got my own little apartment, started making a legal living, and I knew I was an addict at that point. I wasn't an alcoholic yet. So for 20 years I drank. I do have two sons. They were born 2 years apart. I do not know who their fathers were. You know? I do not know who their father. I am a drunk. And I'm a girl. So when you guys go out and you do what you do, but when us girls go out and we do what you do, there are repercussions. And I think that is my biggest regret. And I'm not going to say I regret that part of my past, because my children have, I've made my amends to them, and I continue to make my amends to them. And they are now grown. Both of them were in the Marine Corps. My oldest was 2nd Force Recon. My youngest was with Lima Company. He was one of the first 100 Marines into the south side of Iraq. When I got sober, I was broken. I was completely broken. I asked my sponsor, my first sponsor. I'm on my fourth sponsor, by the way. I tend to wear them out. Imagine that. You know, and I know that I skipped 20 years of my life, but, you know, come on, it's 20 years, y'all. Drink it. You know, don't worry about it. All you missed was a lot of drunk love. No, that's not true. Just for Curtis. I was single for like 8 years. And then I met the first man who had turned my head to see me and die. And he was a motorcycle enthusiast. We married. Oh, God, did we get married? Yeah, two sickies trying to make a willy. It was interesting, to say the least. God almighty. If any of y'all ever went through Bluffton between the years of 92 and 98, there was a little motorcycle shop there in the bend of the road on 377, just this side of the motorcycle or railroad tracks. If any of y'all went through Bluffdale during that time and you saw a party or naked girls dancing on trailers, that was my house. That was me. We threw some parties.
Kurt was always there, wasn't he?
When he was out of prison. Yeah, Kurt was there. Kurt was there. Yeah. Kurt and I. Golly, yeah. Yeah, we can talk of stories on each other, so I won't. Because he can tell you things about me. Exactly. Poor Kurt. I felt so sorry for him. He was just such a little lost puppy. And, you know, I had my shit together, so. I was going to take care of him. I was going to protect him. God bless him. Anyway, my husband and I did make it. We lived together for about 8 years. We were separated for two. We did things like, I'd wake up in the middle of the night, he'd be peeing on me. you know, it was all done with love, you understand. It was all about love. He pulled a gun on me and pulled the trigger. He was like this close to me. It was my gun. It misfired. Next day it shot just fine. Imagine that. Oh, that's right. One day he came in cussing me, and I turned around and hit him. And I was going to take his lip off, but I decided at the last minute to let go. So he still carries a scar where I tried to take his lip off. Yeah. I think he woke up one night. I'm not sure he woke up. I think he just turned up. There, I was beating the hell out of him with something. Oh, it's a murder. church made me help. Yes, it was. And we loved each other. God Almighty. And we had a lot of motorcycles. God. Yeah. A lot of beer. My youngest, I brought the children to the marriage. Our youngest came in one day, and there were a bunch of guys who were gathered out by the shop. And a bunch of guys were there, and we had a bunch of beer, you know, in the coolers and like this. And my youngest had figured out that each one of us who was there, could have four beers. Well, another rider showed up. Johnny, my child, going to take care of us, runs out there and asks this rider, do you have any beer? And he says, no. And he says, well, you can't drink any because they can only have four. And you know how mommy gets when she only has four. He's such a wonderful little Al-Anon. Yes, he is. Actually, my sons drink much like their mother used to. I trained them well. I brought them up right. They are good men. I'm saving them both a seat. So we separated. I went to work at Summer Sky as a cook, as a morning cook. Went to school to become a counselor. None of the paper were state level. Didn't work out. 6, 8, 9 months later, something like that, 6 months later, I'm working as kitchen supervisor. And I am an alcoholic. In January 20th of 2003, I decided that I had no reason or excuse to live on Earth anymore. I was a complete waste of time, skin, effort. I was... And I was not human. I was subhuman. Absolutely subhuman. And I succeeded in my suicide. No one dumps that much poison out of their body. And their suicide is not called a success. I did not fail to kill myself. God did succeed in saving my sorry ass. That's exactly what happened. When I kind of got unstuck, I mean, you know, my hair was all stuck to the funny. Okay, if you can just, you know, imagine, just pour it. And I got unstuck and had to get in the shower before I could get my gown off even. I mean, it was just horrible. I was so angry. Oh, Lord God, I was so angry. He did not have the right to do this to me, to make me survive and do this again and some more. So that night I got home from work, poured a shot of bourbon, and I could not. I was not physically capable of putting that bourbon in my body. And I did leave out the part where I did use alcohol at one point in time, IV. I told people I never shot up. I never shot up. Yes, I did. I used to shoot up alcohol. I shot up bourbon a few times because I couldn't get it to settle in my belly. But if I could get it into my vein and get it into my system, then I could drink and I'd be okay. I'm a real alcoholic. When I first started going to AA, I was scared that y'all wouldn't let me come back because you figure out I wasn't a real alcoholic and make me leave. Yeah, I know. People always laugh at that. I didn't get that. I am an alcoholic. For the last 6 years, and I've got 5 minutes left, I'm really terribly sorry. I try to get sober before this, just never works out. I can't even tell you. I'm an alcoholic. So I went straight into January 20th of 2003, my last drink. The war started. Both of my sons were in combat. Both of my sons are combat veterans. Both of my sons were in country at the same time. And yes, you can do that because they don't have fathers. They do not have fathers. They carry my father's name. And as such, they could both be in country. Now, I still had to sign papers. but they could both be in country, so they were at the same time. And the other day I was thinking about this, and I thought, oh God, who decides to stop drinking? Okay, my divorce is 1 month old, both my kids are in combat, I've got a job that I don't know that I can do, you know, my life is falling apart, life is full of shit, oh, I think I'll stop drinking. Drunks do that, you know, alcoholics do that, right? Right? So I did. And from that time to this, by the grace of God, I haven't found it necessary to drink. And I have been impassioned about what I do for a living. I love being a counselor. I am. It is what I should do. It is what I was born to do. It is an obsession. And just recently, I've had to give it up. Because, you know, working as a treatment counselor early in recovery, well, only an alcoholic would do that, okay? You know, truly. But to do that and stay sober is, you know, how, Linda, how did you stay sober? By God, I stayed sober. But recently it's gotten to that place where I need to step back to evaluate, to look at what I'm doing. I could either go on counseling, and I could do it, or I could drink. Now, don't think I didn't, okay, you know, I could still drink, okay, and I could still counsel, because I am an alcoholic. Hypocrisy, liar, cheat, thief, remember those are still in me. But it came down to a choice, you know, either drink or give up this position that I am absolutely in love with. I didn't drink, so I'm taking some time. At this point in my life, I'm taking time, finally taking time for me. The first 9 months of my recovery, I made two meetings a day. After that, I made at least one meeting a day for months and months and months and months. I have always had a sponsor. I have always been in the steps. I'm in the middle of my fourth step now, which probably explains the drunk a lot, you know? Again, I make my amends. The sixth and seventh step. God, I love that seventh step prayer. Remove from me every defect of character which stands between my service, me and my service to you and my fellow man. I spent so much time on earth taking and stealing and lying and cheating. I spent so much time figuring out and manipulating and dodging. Oh my God. You know, and learning to do that dance we do to keep our ass on the street. Because I was always afraid I couldn't figure out how to get high in jail. You know? So if I stayed on the street, I'd be okay. You know? It's not too much to ask that I spend one day at a time. I got drunk one day at a time. I lived one day at a time when I was using. Not too much to ask, one day at a time, for me to give back a little bit. A little bit. The other day, my oldest son, I was at his house with his bride and my granddaughter, and I was asked to stay alone with my granddaughter. She was 8 months old. I was how old? I was how old? I think I was three and a half years. And I was asked to babysit my granddaughter. They allowed me to stay alone, which is something they told me that never happened. But it did happen. I was at my oldest son's house the other day, and he said, God, Mama, I am so proud of you. I really don't know that I belong on earth today, but I do belong in AA. And I love my people. You have given me grace. And you have given me fellowship. And you've given me a belief that I can do this. And that there is a God, and this God loves me. Wow. What mercy. What mercy. So, with that, thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Linda. I do appreciate you coming and speaking for us. Thank you.
What an honor.
Margaret, would you hand out the chips, please?
I sure will. Mm-hmm. I My name is Margaret. I'm a child of God. The server is my
Margaret.
My birthday date was 10/5/1998, and for that I'm very proud of being a sober person in my family. You know that I'm sober. And I love AA, and AA saved my life. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Uh-huh. This is Skeleton. The Meridian Group chooses to use the chip system to recognize different ranges of sobriety. Our first chip is the desire chip. Is there anyone here who would like to try a way of life for the next 24 hours? And that's this one. Anybody need one? Is there anyone here who needs to reestablish sobriety date or return a witness for a drive? Is there anyone here celebrating 1 month of continuous sobriety? 2 months?
Yep.
In a row?
In a row. All
right. Good job.
Nice. 6 months? 9 months? 18 months? Is there anyone here who has a real birthday today that would like to celebrate? Would like their chip out and celebrate too?
I've already got one. I'm going to do it back.
I'm going to do
it back.
Did you?
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Having trouble walking too. You know, the birthdays are held on what last Wednesday of each month. Thank you for letting me do this.
Thank you, Margaret. Thank you for allowing me to chair this meeting. It was an honor and a privilege. Thank you once again, Linda, for coming to speak to us. Please remember that we are self-cleaning through our own efforts. Please pick up after yourself. And please remember that everything here was shared in strict confidence. Do not repeat it to anyone who was not here tonight. We're now going to close with the Lord's Prayer for those who wish to join us. And afterwards, we have cake and ice cream for everybody. Linda, would you take us out, please?
Mm-hmm. Who loves us till we can love ourselves?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Can you come back and work to the work?
Yes. Today, it's easy.